Chapter 8. It was early evening, and the cloudless sky was transmuting from royal blue to a deep violet, with a smudge of fire orange and lime green over Paddington, 4 miles to the west where, from Old Bailey's perspective anyway, the sun had recently set. Skies, thought Old Bailey, in a satisfied sort of a way. Never are two of them alike. Not by day, nor not by night neither. He was a bit of a connoisseur of skies, was Old Bailey, and this was a good un. The old man had pitched his tent for the night on a roof opposite St. Paul's Cathedral, in the centre of the City of London. He was fond of St. Paul's, and it, at least, had changed little in the last 300 years. It had been built in white Portland stone, which had, before it was even completed, begun to turn black from the soot and the filth in the smoky London air, and now, following the cleaning of London in the 1970s, it was more or less white again, but it was still St. Paul's. He was not sure that the same could be said for the rest of the City of London. He peered over the roof, stared away from his beloved sky down to the sodium-lit pavement below. He could see security cameras affixed to a wall, and a few cars, and one late office worker locking a door and then walking toward the tube. Brrr! Even the thought of going underground made Old Bailey shudder. He was a roof man, and proud of it. Had fled the world at ground level so long ago. Old Bailey remembered when people had actually lived here in the city, not just worked. When they had lived and lusted and laughed, built ramshackle houses, one leaning against the next, each house filled with noisy people. Why, the noise and the mess and the stinks and the songs from the alley across the way, then known, at least colloquially, as Shitton Alley, had been legendary in their time. But no one lived in the city now. It was a cold and cheerless place of offices, of people who worked in the day and went home to somewhere else at night. It was not a place for living any more. He even missed the stinks. The last smudge of orange sun faded into nocturnal purple. The old man covered the cages so the birds could get beauty sleep. They grumbled, then slept. Old Bailey scratched his nose, after which he went into his tent and fetched a blackened stew pot, some water, some carrots and potatoes, and salt, and a well-hanged pair of dead-plucked starlings. He walked out onto the roof, lit a small fire in a soot-blackened coffee can, and was putting his stew on to cook when he became aware that someone was watching him from the shadows by a chimney stack. He picked up his toasting fork and waved it threateningly at the chimney stack. "Who's there?" The Marquis de Carabas stepped out of the shadows, bowed perfunctorily, and smiled gloriously. Old Bailey lowered his toasting fork. "Oh," he said, "it's you. Well, what do you want? Knowledge or birds?" The Marquis walked over, picked a slice of raw carrot from Old Bailey's stew, and munched it. "Information, actually," he said. Old Bailey chortled. He said, "Here's a turn up for the books, eh?" Then he leaned toward the Marquis. "What'll you trade for it?"
"What do you need?"
"Maybe I should do what you do. I should ask for another favour, an investment for one day down the road."
Old Bailey grinned. "Much too expensive in the long run," said the Marquis, without humour. Old Bailey nodded. Now the sun had gone down, it was getting very cold, very fast.
"Shoes, then," he said, "and a balaclava helmet."
He inspected his fingerless gloves. They were more hole than glove.
"And new gloveses. It's going to be a bastard winter."
"Very well, I'll bring them to you." The Marquis de Carabas put his hand into an inside pocket and produced, like a magician producing a rose from thin air, the black animal figure he had taken from Portico's study.
"Now, what can you tell me about this?"
Old Bailey pulled on his glasses. He took the object from Decarabus. It was cold to the touch. He sat down on an air conditioning unit, then, turning the black obsidian statue over and over in his hand, he announced, "It's the great beast of London." The Marquis said nothing. His eyes flickered from the statue to Old Bailey, impatiently. Old Bailey, enjoying the Marquis's minor discomfort, continued at his own pace.
"Now, they say that back in First King Charlie's day, him as got his head all chopped off, silly bugger, before the fire and the plague, this was, there was a butcher, lived down by the Fleet Ditch, and some poor creature he was going to fatten up for Christmas. Some says it was a piglet, and some says it wasn't, and there's some, and I list myself as one of them, that wasn't never properly certain. One night in December, the beast runned away, ran into the Fleet Ditch, and vanished into the sewers. And it fed on the sewage, and it grew, and it grew, and it got meaner and nastier. They'd send in hunting parties after it from time to time."
The Marquis pursed his lips.
"It must have died 300 years ago."
Old Bailey shook his head.
"Things like that, they're too vicious to die. Too old and big and nasty."
The Marquis sighed. "I thought it was just a legend," he said, "like the alligators in the sewers of New York City." Old Bailey nodded sagely.
"What, the big white buggers? They're down there. I had a friend lost a head to one of them."
A moment of silence. Old Bailey handed the statue back to the Marquis. Then he raised his hand and snapped it, like a crocodile head, at Decarabus.
"It was okay,"
gurned Old Bailey, with a grin that was most terrible to behold.
"He had another."
The Marquis sniffed, uncertain whether or not Old Bailey was pulling his leg. He made the statue of the beast vanish inside his coat once more.
"Hang on,"
said Old Bailey. He went back inside his brown tent and returned, holding the ornate silver box the Marquis had given him on their previous meeting. He held it out to the Marquis.
"How about this, then?" he asked. "Are you ready to take it back? It fair gives me the creepy shivers, having it around."
The Marquis walked to the edge of the roof, dropped the 8 feet to the next building.
"I'll take it back when all this is over," he called. "Let us hope that you don't have to use it."
Old Bailey leaned over.
"How will I know if I do?"
"You'll know," called the Marquis, "and the rats will tell you what to do with it." And with that, he was slipping down the side of the building, using drain pipes and ledges as handholds.
"Hope I never finds out, that's all I can say," said Old Bailey to himself.
Then a thought struck him.
"Hoy!" he called out to the night and the city. "Don't forget the shoeses and the gloveses!"